This is Booth 46, live from Pederino's. Not just in the heart of the Loop, but the heart of the Loop. Surrounded by theater, culture, and Chicago's movers and shakers. Each episode brings you, as Irv Kupcinet used to say,
the lively art of conversation.
Local vibes, real conversations, and fresh ideas for experiencing the city. So pull up a chair, lean in, and let's dive into the stories that shape Chicago.
Another Booth 46 podcast, another Booth 46 podcast. Here we are at Pederino's. And celebrating 70 years, 70, of the Jeffrey Ballet, Greg Cameron, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Steve. It's a pleasure.
Oh, it's actually my pleasure because a couple of things. First of all, the Joffrey Ballet is now known, of course, in Chicago, but all over the country. No, better, all over the world. So this was a, and I want to jump right into it here. This was a traveling company primarily, and you said, I don't know if this is how it happened, but I'll make it up. You said at a meeting, let's bring them to Chicago, just like that. And certainly they have been in Chicago at the Lyric Opera House or the Civic Opera House of Chicago now for how many years?
We've been performing at the Lyric for the past 5 years. The first 25 years in Chicago was a little bit out in Rosemont, Erie Crown Theater, and then a good chunk at the Auditorium Theater.
I remember that Erie Crown Theater part of it, So. And that must be night and day compared to what is now.
Correct. Yep. No, we've been 5 years performing on the stage of the Lyric Opera, which has given us so much opportunity artistically, being able to do bigger productions and just enjoy the immense partnership that exists with our team at the Lyric Opera.
You know, I know this much, and I'm no expert on the Joffrey Ballet, but I know this much. You are really a legend in the world of ballet theater. You know, for some number of years, probably forever, difficult to make it work financially. In more recent years, I suspect, even more difficult. Yet you have found a way to do that. I looked up the numbers as to how many people you draw and how the Joffrey is doing financially. You're amazing.
Well, thank you. It is indeed a team. And, you know, for me, as a lifelong Chicagoan, as a young boy that knew the Joffrey Ballet but had never seen them perform, it's quite exciting to be able to lead an organization to such a space of health and vitality. You know, Robert Joffrey, 70 years ago.
With Gerald Arpino.
With Gerald Arpino.
Right.
So 1956 in New York City, created a company called the Joffrey Ballet. A handful of dancers that truly got into the back of a station wagon and took ballet across the country. Robert Joffrey wanted to create a quintessentially American ballet company.
And you've done everything from creating rock performances, I'm not talking about you personally, I'm talking about the Joffrey, over the years, into ballet performances, to taking traditional, way traditional, from back before, well before even the 1950s, right? And taking those performances. So you've done at Joffrey both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, well, one of the founding principles that Robert Joffrey invested in was always honoring the classics, but also looking to make sure that ballet and dance was relevant. So engaging young choreographers. So the history of the organization has been doing the classics, but pushing the envelope. In 1970, Robert Joffrey commissioned a choreographer by the name of Twyla Tharp, who in 1970 was not a household name. You know, in 2026, Twyla Tharp
in the
is
world of
still
dance,
making
sure.
dance and still
yeah.
dancing.
Yeah.
So he had a vision. He said that he wanted ballet to be the center of the company, but not its circumference.
Mm.
So he carried that through. Joffrey, you know, was the artistic director, founder. He passed away in 1988. Jerry Arpino took on the responsibilities of being the artistic director. And for the past 20 years, or almost 20 years, Ashley Weider is our artistic director, the Mary B. Galvin artistic director of the Joffrey Ballet. And in Chicago, we know the Galvin family, the founders of Motorola.
Yeah.
So Mary Galvin is a board member of the Joffrey Ballet. And Mary, if you're listening, I hope I don't get in trouble, but Mary will be celebrating her 103rd birthday in 2026. And she and her family are still investing and committed to keeping the Joffrey strong and healthy. So going back to your question about, you know, a dance company, you know, can have lots of bold ideas.
Yeah.
But you need a community that believes in supporting it. And Chicago, for the past 30 years, has embraced the organization and said, we want you here, we want you to be healthy, and that means we will lean in and support you.
I have questions about that, but let me go back. How old did you say?
Mary?
Yeah.
Mary is going to be 103 in 2026.
Okay, so what I want to know is her secret.
I hope I'm not getting in trouble with Mary, but she's a, you know what? She loves the arts.
Yeah.
You know what? She is a believer in the power of the arts to make a difference.
Do you think there's something to that? Do you think that experiencing laughter, experiencing joy, experiencing all that you do, which is at times wonderment when you go to the ballet, is that the secret to forever youth?
You know, interestingly enough,
I'm not a doctor,
but doctors are prescribing visits to museums. They're prescribing visits to ballets, to theater, to opera, as ways for people to deal with both physical and mental health issues. So, you know, in this country, we've always leaned into, of course, Western medicine, and hey, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with Western medicine. Abbott Laboratories has been a longtime supporter of the Joffrey.
Yeah.
But I think in 2026, doctors are looking and saying it makes a difference. And we know at the Joffrey that the programs that we do with the youth of the city changes lives. You know, it gives them a sense of hope. It gives them a sense of identity, being able to see themselves, you know, in a different way. And I would say, very unscientific, but we dance before we walk. Think about it. Little kids, we dance before we walk.
Do they?
Little kids are dancing. They're standing up.
Yeah,
they're shaking in their strollers.
Yeah.
And we sing before we talk. And then for some reason, we decide that singing and dancing are not necessary, they're extras. So I've had experiences as a kid growing up in Chicago at the Art Institute, at the Goodman Theater, at the CSO, and those experiences, along with visits to the Chicago History Museum, click, and they make you understand who you are, and I think give you joy. And don't we all need a little more joy in our lives?
Well, yeah. So I want to go back to what I was talking about. You've got this company, the Joffrey, really becoming extremely well-known, traveling all over the world. And then, did I describe it right? And I probably did not at all describe it right, that you were in a meeting one day and said, we need to be in Chicago, just like that.
Well, you know, I can't say that I was in that meeting, but several of our board members, and Mary Galvin being one, Bruce Sagan, who just recently passed away, who was integrally involved in bringing the Joffrey to Chicago, Barbara Kipper, and a handful of Chicagoans, along with Mayor and Maggie Daly, looked at the cultural landscape of the city, and they said, we've got great theater, we have world-class museums, we have a world-class symphony and an opera, but we don't have a world-class ballet company. And the Joffrey was having financial challenges in New York City, and it was really that consortium of political leaders, philanthropists, you know, civic boosters. Some people don't like the word boosters, but I think there's nothing wrong with being a booster for something that you believe, said, let's get the Joffrey to Chicago. So it was that group of people that truly took trucks to New York City and brought sets,
literally,
and costumes and things to Chicago. And then the organization had to sort out and figure out the past 30 years. I've only been with the company for, you know, almost 14 years.
Well, that's long enough. And financially, things were not in great straits. You came along and really, to be honest, helped straighten things out.
Well, I think, you know, it's a real team effort. And if you've ever worked in a cultural organization, you know that things work when the team is aligned. You know, and it really starts with Ashley Weider, again, our Mary B. Galvin artistic director. I always love to be able to say that. And his vision. Ashley has been, you know, 18, 19 years with the organization. And his vision and his plan is something that then I get to execute on the business side.
What is it, though, about the ballet? This ballet, Chicago has embraced it. And you talk about the donors, et cetera, but it's really, I've got them here somewhere, the audience numbers.
Yeah, the audience.
Which are spectacular.
It keeps growing, and I think it's because, you know, Ashley has programmed ballets, you know, and ballet is
okay, so
one
then,
language of dance.
All right,
you might come to the Joffrey and go, that's not ballet. A couple of years ago, we had a young choreographer from England do a piece that was more like a hip-hop performance.
But that's the thing. You guys, like the Goodman Theater, right next door to where
sure.
we're at right now at Pederino's, takes chances.
Yep.
And you're known for that. So this wasn't taking a chance. The Nutcracker. Last year, your adaptation of the Nutcracker, which we saw, by the way, and loved, it was Chicago's 1893 World's Fair that it was presented at. I think it was more than $7 million in ticket sales, playing to more than 50,000 people in its limited run, you know, around the holiday season. It's the Nutcracker. That's not a new production.
Well, you know, and interestingly enough, and I was just in a meeting, so the numbers are really top of mind, but this year we did $7.7 million at the box office.
What ballet theater 70, does that?
70,000 attendees. Two student matinees, so we bring almost 6,000 Chicago public schools. We bus them to the Lyric.
How important is that?
That is, to me, one of the most important things that we do.
Explain why.
Because we are investing in the future. And some of those kids may decide to be dancers, artists, musicians. Some of them may go to law school. They may just become a good civic city employee,
mm-hmm.
but investing in the next generation, they also become the next generation of audience members, subscribers, donors. So to me, everything that we do is connected. And the work that we do out in the Chicago public schools is where it all starts. If you don't have a new audience, you know,
where do you go?
Where do you
at
go?
Some point. Well, they live to 103, I guess, or whatever. But it's not only that, it's the exposure that some of these kids otherwise might not get to the arts.
Totally, totally. I mean, I can say back in December, in just talking with the kids, most of the students that were at the Lyric had never been downtown. Most of them had never been to a live ballet performance with an orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they hadn't had that experience. And if you haven't seen something, you don't even know that it could be a possibility. And to your point, the Joffrey's Nutcracker, you know, uses Chicago as its base. I mean, think about it. In 1893, Chicago was bold enough to have a World's Fair that attracted over 26 million people to the city.
And 26 million
Choose
people
Chicago,
then.
Take a lesson. Like, yeah. 26 million
yeah.
people came.
Yeah.
There was no O'Hare Airport. There was no Midway Airport. You know, so we wanted to use and build on the legacy of Chicagoans that thought big. They imagined that the city could be more.
And you guys always do think big. I mean, when you see the set design, the number of actors on and dancers on stage, it's big. And the other thing is that people come, I mean, there are so many people that live in Des Plaines, that live in Schiller Park, wherever. They don't come in to see this. Yet there are many, thousands, that travel halfway across the country or further to see the Joffrey Ballet.
Yep. No, we are, I think I'm at liberty to say this, but less than an hour ago, I was on a call with folks at Boston Consulting Group, and they are going to be working with us doing a pro bono economic impact study on the Nutcracker.
Really?
And to your point exactly, think about, you know, not just the dollars that we make at the box office, but the impact on parking garages, taxis, restaurants.
Yeah.
All of the musicians we play, there's a huge, huge economic impact.
The hotels.
Hotels.
All the people that stay here and then
airlines,
go to... Right, all
the train,
things.
The train station is steps away from the Lyric. So in, you know, probably 2 or 3 months, we'll be able to share with the WGN listeners the results of an economic impact study.
Now.
That we can use and share with elected officials, with corporate funders to say... Investing in the arts is a smart decision.
I'm totally a fan of that. And as you know, there's more of that coming with the Cultural Stadium right here, right where we're at right now, downtown.
Exactly.
And we'll explain what that is. But first, we have something important to do, beside a commercial I have to do. But we have ice cream in front of us. Now, you are a native Chicagoan. And when we come back from this little commercial that I'm doing... You tell me whether this is the best peppermint ice cream you've ever had. Don't say anything yet. Let it dance around your taste buds for a while. Pettorino's is celebrating 25 years in the heart of the Loop. You could join Pettorino's for weekly lunch specials, including their mouth-watering Italian beef. And they're soon to be very, very famous. It will be famous by, I don't know, next week. Yellowfin tuna sandwich with a lemon aioli sauce. You could hear jazz every Monday night starting at 6:30. You could try the Sunset Sips in the Loop from 2 to 5 p.m. and at 8 p.m. to close Monday through Friday. They have a heated patio. Do you have a dog?
I don't.
We can
I did have
one.
A dog, but well, I don't anymore.
Well, we can get you a dog. Because then you could take your dog out to the heated patio, because it is dog-friendly. You can enjoy catering. You could have the whole company cater in food from Pettorino's. I think that's a good idea. And tell me about the peppermint ice cream.
The peppermint ice cream is indeed delicious.
It is.
It's got a lovely crunch and a nice creamy texture.
He also does restaurant reviews. This is what I forgot what I was going to ask you about. I teased it so well.
Cultural Stadium?
Yes, the Cultural Stadium. Thank you, Mike, in the background there. The Cultural Stadium. Great idea, I think. Explain what I'm talking about.
Sure, and I need to give a bow and credit to Lou Raisin.
Lou Raisin, yeah.
I mean, Lou Raisin, who
has done so much.
Is an incredible believer in artists and arts and the heart of the city, the Loop. But probably almost 2 years ago, Lou collected a group of cultural leaders and started talking about, you know, what is going to be the next big thing. We talked about the 1893 Columbian Exposition. You know, then there was 1933. Millennium Park, is now, iconic. Of course, a Picasso sculpture in 1967. But it's time post-COVID for the city to do something bold and really think about how can we reinvigorate the Loop. And as a lifelong Chicagoan, I will say, that other than, between May and October, you maybe come to Chicago for the weather. But most of the time, people that are coming to Chicago are coming to see the amazing architecture, attend theater, come to great restaurants, see dance, music, opera. And I think this group of...
The Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, the Cubs.
We hope the Chicago Bears.
Yes. But it's, the cultural energy of this city is so, so vibrant.
Absolutely.
And so we're calling the Cultural Stadium as a, a big backdrop to think about reimagining what Chicago can be post-COVID. How do we re-energize the Loop? So Michelle Boone, who is the president and CEO of the Poetry Foundation, former commissioner of the Department of Cultural Affairs, and the Joffrey Ballet are going to create Poetry Way between the Chicago Theater and Joffrey Tower.
Now, I knew about this, but I didn't know Joffrey was involved until this very second. So, you know, poetry isn't something that people come in droves to see necessarily.
Well,
but what a brilliant idea, taking this alleyway that isn't used for anything except maybe there's some trash cans there and some people hanging out who have nowhere else to hang out, and taking that and turning that, transforming that into a way in which people, no matter who they are, can be exposed to poetry.
Yeah, and I would say poetry is another one of those things that as a little kid, you maybe, you know, your parents read you rhyming couplets in poetry, and then it somehow gets lost from your life. And under Michelle's leadership at the Poetry Foundation, poetry is being reinvigorated, and poetry is very aligned to dance.
Mm-hmm.
It's about movement. It's about rhythm. So we're having fun. We're going to create a cultural umbrella, more formally launching a way to make sure that every kid in Chicago has access to not just Joffrey performances, but Goodman performances, symphony, the Art Institute, the MCA, the Auditorium Theater. We're exploring a wide range of how can artists and arts organizations reinvigorate the loop. Certainly the new Google building a block away from us is going to be an anchor. What's happening on LaSalle Street with conversions of buildings?
Well, also the Civic Opera House will be a part of this. He's talking about in Las Vegas, I think it is, they have the dancing lights or whatever they are. And doing the same thing against the wall, the giant wall of the Civic Opera House. And I wanted to ask you about that because when you go see the Joffrey Ballet, I think the Civic. And I think there are two shows. I think one is the show you see on stage. But the other is the theater itself.
Yeah, I mean, the Lyric Opera House is an iconic architectural part of this city. And of course...
Should I call it the Lyric Opera House or the Civic?
The Lyric, yeah.
Okay,
the Civic.
I won't do it again.
You know, that's
it's like
okay.
The Sears Tower and the...
You know, I think for Chicagoans, you know, we adjust to names.
We've had to,
but,
yes.
But, you know, it's... I think etched on the building, you know, is the Civic.
They
call it... We call it the Lyric now. We perform at the Lyric.
Okay.
You know, there used to be the little Civic Theater, remember, at the mm-hmm. north end of the building.
Yes.
And years ago,
is that how it,
they converted that into more backstage space.
Okay.
But yeah, that whole building is rife for potential development, both inside and, to your point, the exterior of the building, facing west, is something that we're exploring, being able to do projections much like the Merchandise Mart has done with Art on the Mart.
I've talked to Lou about that very thing.
Yeah.
That and, what is it, the ducks? That he wants,
ducks. Yeah,
he wants giant ducks.
Giant ducks. You know, I think we still laugh about the ducks, and ducks seem to be popping up everywhere. Actually, one of our board members recently came in to meet with me, and she gave me a little rubber ducky. And I said, like, is this related to the cultural stadium? And she said, no. She said, my daughter has a Jeep, and I guess some Jeep people have these little rubber ducks that they put on the
dashboard.
Yeah, I've seen
that. Oh, yeah.
So I'm not up to speed on all the details of that. But this is, I think, bold ideas that are really generating interest from the corporate sector.
Oh, I think these things are going to happen.
In fact, tomorrow morning, I will be meeting with Lou Raisin
and
10 other members of the Cultural Stadium
team.
Okay,
tell Lou I said, the giant duck, he wants one the size of Picasso.
Yep.
Or bigger. I said, it's got to be called Duckzilla.
I will tell him that, for sure.
Yes. All right, now I have some questions for you, Greg. What's the best job you've ever had?
You know, I have to say the current job that I have. It really has given me the opportunity to, I think, activate on the things that are important to me. Supporting artists,
mm-hmm.
Supporting arts education. Our Granger Academy, during the course of a week, has over 1,000 students pass through our studios. And then our community engagement programs and the work that we do in Chicago Public Schools.
You know, I meant to ask you, I need to ask you this, because I cannot forget. What is the production you have coming up? I believe that's the one that will be in celebration of all those 70 years.
We open, actually, on Thursday, February 19th, a program called American Icons.
That's the one, right.
Yeah,
and so tell me about that, because this is going to be huge.
Sure. It's a mixed repertory program. It will feature four pieces, a piece choreographed by Robert Joffrey, a piece choreographed by Jerry Arpino, so our founding artistic directors, a piece by Glenn Tetley, who was one of the original six company artists of the Joffrey Ballet, and then a work by Martha Graham, who is an iconic part of the ballet world and influenced Joffrey, Arpino, and Tetley. So a beautiful program. It's one of those programs where you can come and it's like going to a restaurant and having shared plates, you know, where you sometimes eat things that you think like maybe I don't like it.
Yeah.
If you come, you might like one more than the other, but you will walk away with a beautiful experience of understanding the language of dance, ballet, and movement to extraordinarily beautiful music. The Lyric Opera Orchestra is the music behind the magic. One of the pieces will be performed to the Lyric Orchestra. And I have to say, I do not think in my many, many, many years of attending the Lyric that I've ever been at something where their orchestra is played. Behind those beautiful grill works, the deco grill works, are organ pipes. So yeah, join us. The 19th we open. There are 10 performances, matinees if you're interested in, you know, coming early. But don't miss it. And it really celebrates, you know, our 70th anniversary.
All right, now, the worst job you've ever had.
You know, I feel really lucky that I don't think I've ever had, like, a worst job.
You've been involved.
I've learned lots of things, you know, and you learn different things at different places.
Yeah.
But I am going to say, when I was in high school, my father worked for International Harvester. And if you remember back to the days of invoices being stapled in them, then, so, you know, younger people are not even going to recognize this next word when I say it, but they were taking all of their records and converting them from paper to microfiche.
I
remember microfiche?
Yeah, you go to a library, I think, and have to...
You know, so they were scanning all of these invoices, and I spent a summer with a staple remover sitting at a table removing staples. I had to wear a necktie to my dad's office. I was paid $3.75, and I was not unhappy when that summer was over.
You mean $3.75 an hour?
$3.75 an hour.
Not for the whole summer,
no,
I hope.
No, $3.75 an hour. So, you know, I think that was maybe my least enjoyable job. But every other job that I had, my first job was a paperboy. I delivered the Chicago Daily News and the Chicago American, which became Chicago Today. My older brother delivered the Tribune and the Sun-Times.
Why did he get the better newspapers?
Well, he had the morning route, you know, was really my dad's route. I did the after-school, you know, end-of-day route.
And to think that there were morning papers and afternoon papers when people don't even know what a newspaper is today.
And to this day, my partner and I get four newspapers delivered.
Do you?
The Sun-Times, the Tribune, the New York Times, and the Wall Street Journal. Delivered to our doorstep. At about 6 o'clock, I hear it drop outside our kitchen door, and I start devouring print. And as long as they're printing newspapers, I'm going to read them.
Well, that's for another week, maybe. I don't know.
Fingers crossed. They said books were going to die. And look, at Barnes & Noble is
opening coming back?
A major store at the corner of State and Randolph.
Exactly.
I'm like on the moon, right across from us.
That would actually be someone that would be good for us to talk with.
Yeah.
Someone who runs the bookstore. Yeah, because they're back. What makes you the happiest? Reading the newspaper, reading books, above and beyond that.
But, you know, beyond that, I think time with family and friends. Okay. And it can be, you know, international travel. It can be domestic thing. It can be, you know, my partner and I cooking for friends at our home, you know, taking a walk with a friend. Just really, really simple things that you can do to sort of breathe and decompress. The best part, there weren't a lot of good parts about COVID, but one of the good parts about COVID was walking, 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 and being able to walk with friends. I think that's pure joy. And my parents are, 90 and 91, and it's fun to have parents that are indeed, you know, best friends and people that you can still share with.
Oh. And apparently there's something in the water you offer because you live to 102. I don't know. Or 90 or 91, which isn't bad either. The best thing about Chicago?
I would say the best thing about Chicago is the collaborative nature of the city. You know, we talk about
it's everything
the
you
cultural
would,
stadium.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You know, we work together. And I will say this, my first, you know, sort of grown-up job, if you will, I was an intern at the city's Department of Cultural Affairs back when Harold Washington was mayor. Lois Weisberg was the executive director of the Chicago Office of Fine Arts.
Sure.
Joan Harris was the commissioner. And I learned from them how to be a collaborator. And I've been able to carry that through to work that I did at the Museum of Contemporary Art, the Art Institute, WTTW, WFMT, the boards that I have served on. And in Chicago, we get things done because we work smart and we work together. And we can get twice as much done for half of the financial investment.
Well, I am glad to talk to you. I'm glad to meet you. I'm glad you mentioned all those organizations, because when you do a deep dive about you, which I did, you made a difference for all those organizations. And what you rattled off were all nonprofits that needed it at the time you were there. You're like a firefighter. You come in and you save the day. And you know what? Nonprofits, at the end of the day, I think, need to be run like businesses, even if they are nonprofits. And you've understood that, you're known for that, and others have replicated what you do. So thank you very much, and thank you for keeping the arts alive and really well and alive in Chicago, and everything you've done for the Joffrey Ballet and continue to do. He is Greg Cameron, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. Can I make one correction? Because I realized early on...
What did I do?
I said that the Joffrey Ballet performed at Eric Crown Theater. The Nutcracker was performed at Eric Crown Theater, but it wasn't the Joffrey Ballet. When the Joffrey performed at the Rosemont Horizon and at the Auditorium Theater. And that's a whole other chapter of ballet history in Chicago. But yeah, collaboration and partnership makes this city work. And it's great to have journalists that believe in what we do. We can tell our stories, but without you amplifying what we are and what we're doing and where you can buy tickets, you know, we wouldn't be filling those seats at the Nutcracker. So
did you hear what he said? Without me, the whole culture in Chicago would
disappear. Looking at WGN, you know. Thank you, GN.
WGN's been part of that story forever.
Forever.
Yeah. Greg, thank you again.
Thank you.
That's a wrap from Booth 46 at Pederino's, where the loop comes to life. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, keep the conversation going and keep exploring Chicago.